Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go, got to catch my sugar. My plantain sugar, my plantain sugar, my plantain sugar. Ah, plantain, 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 plantain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the Arsenal edition. This is your host, Dean, and I am here with my co-host. Today, it ain't Coach, because Coach was at the game. Today, it's Mitch. What's going on, Mitch?
I'm angry, Dean.
What?
That was a despicable performance, and I am Arteta out. We did not score enough goals. Rule Walters did not play. My favorite player, Bandera, who I totally know his first name, did not get in the game. This is despicable. I need Arteta out of the building tomorrow. Like, this is not a team that could challenge for the title. I need everyone fired. I need to sell everyone. This is unbelievable. I'm furious.
I am glad that you guys got to meet our surprise guest, Lee Gunner. Now, Mitch, what's going on, Mitch?
Hi, Dean. How are you?
Thank you. How are you, my friend?
I'm great because, as I always say, when Arsenal score a lot of goals, I love when Arsenal score a lot of goals. Although I feel like we could have done more. I feel like we could have done more. I love a 6-0 win, but I think we could have gotten 10. I feel like we should have been greedier. That's my gripe.
I agree with you because if we'd scored one more goal, we'd have gone ahead of City in the table. So that would have been nice.
Exactly.
And just generally, I mean, we created more than enough to get that many goals. And it's always nice to take advantage of opportunities. But it's kind of churlish to be complaining that you didn't score more than 6 goals against West Ham away from home. That's crazy.
Boo. I want more goals.
That said, this felt a lot like, I mean, we can't call this a trap game because the game next weekend is against Burnley away. And respectfully to Burnley, you would expect Arsenal to win that game. However, there was a lot of chatter that because Arsenal celebrated so hard in the last game against Liverpool, that they really needed to win this game to keep their title hopes alive and not be bitches. What were your expectations after the game? Like, what did you think was going to happen in this game?
So, I mean, I'm 22. So, like, a lot of times when I go out drinking, I'm pretty good by the next day. Sometimes I got a hangover. But, like, I feel like even guys that are a little bit older than me, we had the whole party bus after the win against Liverpool. The players went out to the clubs. We had a parade. It was awesome. And I don't think a hangover lasts that long. Like they got their drinks in. I think they're okay. We had a week in between these matches. So, you know, despite the absolute rager that Arsenal was throwing last week, I think we're going to be okay for this game. But I think we're always going to have a little bit of PTSD after, especially if you're losing to West Ham twice in one season.
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, I didn't vocalize this to anyone. I only told my brother, who was watching on a different TV, at the 2-0 mark. But I told him, I was like, yesterday I had a random vision that Arsenal was going to score 7 goals in this game, and 2 of them were going to come from Kai Havertz. So I guess I was wrong in very many ways, but the big picture I wasn't wrong about. Did I have a justification for feeling that way? Not particularly. I just kind of feel as if a lot of the open play issues that people have obsessed about throughout this season with Arsenal have been resolved for quite a while. We just happened to go through a run of bad form around the same time that we resolved those issues. Mm-hmm. So we didn't quite clock it. Because today we ended up with, if I recall correctly, 2 set piece goals. I guess the 3. Penalty, 3 with the penalty as well. So 3 set piece goals, 3 open play goals. So I was expecting, and West Ham has beat us twice this season in the Carabao Cup and in the league game that we probably should have won at the Emirates. So I just kind of felt, you know, and Coach loves to mention how he thinks Arteta is probably one of the more spiteful coaches in existence today. So in my heart of quiet hearts, I was like, we're going to win this one big. But I was expecting seven, you know, because West Ham is seven letters, you know, like, you know,
exactly. You got to spell it out.
Exactly.
I would prefer if we spelled out West Ham United. I think that would have been ideal.
It's a lot of work. A lot of work. What did you think of the lineup?
I woke up, saw the lineup, and was like, what the fuck happened to our depth? Like, we had like some really, really, like, our bench last week against Liverpool looked really, really good. And then all of a sudden, Smith Rowe's dead, Vieira's dead, Jesus is dead, and Zinchenko is dead. I don't know where any of them are. We're never seeing Fabio Vieira ever again. Like, I don't think he exists anymore. I think this is the longest red card suspension I've ever seen. I don't understand. Well,
he had surgery on a groin injury around the same period that, like, right after he got that red card, he had surgery on a groin injury. Then shortly after that, you know, because if you remember, I don't know if it was the same game, but he scored a penalty and celebrated his girlfriend having a baby. So he just had a baby as well. And I've noticed a trend. I think it happened with Ramsdale. I think it's happened with Vieira. And I can think of at least one other player where whenever they have a baby, they kind of get sat down for like a game or two.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's about. I haven't had a baby myself, so I don't know how hard that is to do. But maybe Arteta knows something we don't know.
It's because Arteta hates the children. He didn't play Rule Walters and the other guy whose name I'm forgetting.
Yeah, Bandana Boy. the number of injuries was a bit of a surprise. But were you concerned?
I think there was like a little bit of nervousness about it just because it's like, oh, all of a sudden we have four guys that like I would love to see play that aren't available. And so it's always just like, well, if this becomes another one of those games like it was in the home match against them where, you know, we're creating good chances, we're not putting the ball in the back of the net, and we want something different, we're not really going to have a lot of variety off the bench. Mm-hmm. Now, in hindsight, Elneny and Cedric got minutes. So, you know what? It's okay.
I wouldn't say I was concerned by any means, but I was pretty sure, even though I'd heard from the last game against Liverpool that Jorginho was carrying an injury, a foot injury, I was pretty sure he was going to start this game because, in a sense, I was sort of thinking about Declan Rice mostly because, you know, we've had the bad results against West Ham. He's had to listen to a bunch of booing and a bunch of shitty chanting about him in both games against them. And it just felt like, you know, to quote, I suppose, the competition, wink, wink, Clive on the Arsenal Vision podcast pointed out that it'd be good for Declan Rice to have that sort of mental blanket, security blanket in Jorginho with him in this game because mm-hmm. of the circumstances surrounding the game. And that sounded like a really good idea to me. So when I saw the injuries but saw that Jorginho was still on the bench, I kind of calmed down because I was like, worst case scenario, for some reason we can't control this game with the lineup that we have out there, then Jorginho can come in at half or whatever and, you know, put a foot on the ball or whatever and help Rice get through the game.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think my biggest concern with the lineup came like within the first 5 minutes of the game, because I felt like, you know, it's easy to forget about this after a 6-0 win because you're just like a euphoric six goals that you get to experience. But it was a little bit of a nervy start. Like Kivior got his pocket picked off rip. Like I felt like they were pressing high and pressing pretty effectively. And so I was thinking in the back of my head, I'm like, okay, this could be a game that West Ham could try to take advantage of us not having Jorginho and Zinchenko, who are our two best progressors, by pressing us really high, and then we have issues getting out of our own half, and then, you know, we're unable to really dominate the game and create a lot of chances. Granted, my worries were subdued pretty quick because I felt like we kind of got into the game pretty quick. We got into a rhythm. We started controlling. We were able to pass out of their press despite not having Zinchenko or Jorginho. Mostly because I felt like their press was a little disjointed. A lot of times it was just Jared Bowen being a fucking crackhead. And I don't think that like a lot of their other players were pressing with them. They weren't really going as a unit. They weren't hunting as a pack. It was kind of just one guy going. I think it made it easier. If they had a more organized press in this game, I think this is a game where we could have been high-pressed. Like, for instance, this lineup against Liverpool, I don't think would have been as good just because of the lack of progression without Zinchenko and Jorginho.
Well, I have a slightly different viewpoint on all of that, because I think the sort of shaky start came from not expecting West Ham to press, because they rarely do. It's not always his way to do that. But you'd also expect the home team to, you know, get on the front foot for at least a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's basically all that was. But even so, Arteta knows Moyes as well as anyone can know Moyes. And I'm pretty sure he probably wasn't expecting it, or he didn't really prepare the team for that. But from my perspective, I think even this lineup works against a team like Liverpool. Because keep in mind, Trossard didn't start that game, which in turn has a knock-on effect on who stands where. Mm-hmm. And here, as we've done pretty much since about the Brighton game, when I believe we sort of sorted out the open play goal issue, open play chance creation and goal scoring issue, I would say we've been essentially been copying Roberto De Zerbi's buildup pattern, in that we drop like six people back into our buildup, maybe even seven when you count the goalkeeper. So the sixth guy today was Odegaard. Against Liverpool, the sixth guy was Jorginho. But since he wasn't playing, it was Odegaard that was dropping way back to sort of join Rice in a double pivot. Then as the game sort of progressed, as we got into like the middle of the first half before the goal, I was just mostly fascinated by what I thought were some really interesting patterns of buildup. Like there were just, it was just much more fluid than I recall. Cause when we weren't creating a lot, or when we weren't creating enough open play chances, I felt like part of the issue was that we gave too much responsibility to Declan Rice. And maybe it wasn't so much that we gave him the responsibility. Maybe it was more that he was snatching the responsibility, because West Ham, Superman, you know, he's got that put the team on my back gene. So once things kind of got a little bit slow, he started putting his foot on the ball a lot. And it was like, bro, like, you're a great player, but we don't need you to do that shit all the time, because there are other great players around you. And today I saw Ben White inverting.
Yeah.
Saliba running up the right flank like he was Ben White.
Hell yeah.
Gabriel and Kivior switching positions. You know, it was very fluid back there. And even before we scored a goal, that was what was exciting me the most, because it meant that the ball was getting where it needed to go all the time, it felt like. And I suppose I'll pivot with this question. Who was your man of the match?
Damn. I feel like it's gotta be Rice, just because he got two assists and a goal against his former team. Like I feel like just for that, like if this was against any other team, I think that it's probably Saka or Odegaard. But because it's against West Ham, I'd give it to Declan Rice.
I think that's a perfect choice and a perfect analysis of how to rank the best players in this game. I think for me personally, it's Rice because of, you know, the context surrounding the game. But overall, I'd probably give it to Saka, then Rice, then Odegaard. And I thought they were all excellent. But a guy that I think might get overshadowed in the final analysis of this game is Neandre Trossard. Because I thought he was magnificent as a false nine. You know, there was a suspicion that maybe he was going to be more the eight and Havertz the nine, but that's not what ended up happening in practice. And I thought he helped out a lot, like dropping back into the buildup, you know, sort of functioning as that, maybe that sixth player at times to allow Odegaard to stay further up. And some of the passes he was playing when he got on the ball deep, you know, he essentially created the second goal. But let's not skip to that. The first goal came from a set piece. Apparently, we're really fucking good at this. And we have one of our tallest players crossing the ball in for people these days. What did you make of Saliba's header on that?
That was a grown-ass man play. That was just like, I am bigger, stronger, and better than you. Yeah, Saliba made it fucking known.
Yeah,
it's like, awesome. That's like one of my favorite kinds of headers. Just big guy going up higher than everyone, pounding that in.
Indeed. I thought that even if he didn't score it, I think Havertz probably would have scored it, or at least gotten a shot on goal from a header as well, because I think he had jumped higher than Saliba, behind Saliba. So kind of felt like if he didn't get it, the other guy was going to get it.
On Gabriel's goal, I thought Kai scored it for a second.
Yeah, the camera work kind of made it seem like he did that. On the first goal still, though, shout out to Ben White for being the scumbag that he always is. He's mastered the art of getting in the goalkeeper's way without getting fouls called. Because I remember once upon a time when he played finger wrestling with Danny Ward, and we got a fantastically fine goal from Trossard called back. Was that away at Leicester at home? I can't remember.
It was away at Leicester.
And now he's sort of perfected getting in goalkeeper's way so well that he doesn't get called on those fouls anymore. But essentially, he blocked off Areola very briefly on that goal and allowed a free header for Saliba. Then it feels like from that point on, the floodgates opened up. We already talked Trossard a little bit, but that ball to Saka in behind was tremendous.
Oh my God, it was outstanding. And it's, I mean, granted, our second goal did come from a penalty, but it's like game state just immediately changes for Arsenal as soon as we score the goal. Like the, like we're playing a team like West Ham who wants to sit back. They don't want to dominate this game. We're going to have the bulk of the ball. We need to break the case open early so that we can actually like have the space for them to be playing a little bit higher because they're trying to score a goal. And Trossard can send that great ball in Saka. Great ball. He was totally onside. And it was funny because I had tweeted because like right before Areola made like a really, really nice save, like had a great goalkeeping because Saka
had, right?
No, on Saka's little like chip. He comes out at an angle where the only thing Saka can do to get the ball by him is that little chip over his leg. And he came out at such a great angle that the only way Saka could get a shot off is not going to be on target. And it was so well done. And then right after that, so I tweeted, that was great goalkeeping. And then right after that, he takes down Saka in the box. And so people were like, that's not a great goalkeeping. I was like, yeah, I was talking about a different thing. Like I was talking about before. Yeah, that Saka did great. Trossard did great. Areola did not. You don't want to take the guy down in the box like that. I think if that's a center back, that's a red. But goalkeepers are always going to get a little bit more benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
For some reason, like I know Bukayo Saka is a decent penalty taker, but I will always be nervous when he is taking a penalty, and I don't know why.
I don't know, man. It might be some white shit because you know, people racially abused him that one time when he missed with, you know, so maybe that's why I feel nervous.
It's white guilt. That's just yes. Like, oh, I just feel.
For a brief moment, I thought, you know, because remember him and Odegaard were doing that whole home away thing for a little bit at the beginning of the season. But once he got fouled, I knew he was taking it because he had missed at West Ham last season.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no way he's letting this opportunity pass him by. So it was never in doubt in my mind. I knew he was going to score it. I want to make a quick, this is the first time Craig Paulson has refereed us this season or refereed either team, according to the commentators. And it's hard. I'm not complaining. I have no complaints about the refereeing today at all, but I want to make a quick observation. Mm-hmm. Very early in the game, Edson Alvarez fouled Bukayo Saka on what was not necessarily a breakaway. We kind of had them fenced in and they were trying to break out and it was a 50-50 between them. Alvarez kind of goes through Saka a little bit. Gets an early booking. Is West Ham's deepest lying midfielder. When you use the tools that you have available to you as a referee and do your job properly, this is the kind of thing that can happen. Mm-hmm. When the DM for a team that wants to sit in a deep block gets booked within 20 minutes of the start of the game because he made a bad tackle, then that allows the team that got fouled to play more freely. And I think we kind of saw that even before the goal started going in. We just saw Arsenal was flowing and out. I'm sure we would have flowed without the yellow card, but it certainly helped because it meant that a hatchet man couldn't just go around kicking people and getting away with it. So when the refs do their jobs correctly, we see better football. You know, maybe John Brooks, who was on VAR, and Craig Paulson have been watching a lot of AFCON because those refs are fucking magnificent. Not a single controversy the entire tournament.
Yeah.
Not a single one. Very little dissent. The referees actually commit more dissent than the players do. You know, so I just wanted to go on that detour. I thought the set pieces helped for sure, but I thought we were just so comfortable getting into West Ham's final third. And it wasn't necessarily because they were open or they were playing a high line or anything. I just genuinely feel as if that since that Brighton game, once again, we've sort of created new mechanisms that allow us to break on people a little easier. I mean, am I making this up or am I just this much of an Arteta stan?
I think that we've always been doing this. Like we've been this good throughout the entire season, but it's very easy to look at December. Especially now, it's easy to look at December and be like, okay, so the stats told us that everything about our December and our terrible finishing and our bad form was an outlier. Like that we were still creating chances. We were just finishing well below the margin that we typically are. We've always been a team that's able to control games and create chances, and then all of a sudden it just fell off a cliff. We're now doing it again, so it's very easy to now look at December and be like, okay, so that was clearly just like a weird outlier. Like the players are tired. We needed the break to go to Dubai, get a little bit of camaraderie going, and then hit the ground running as soon as we come back. And I don't know if it's something like, I don't think it's something new. I think we've just always been this good. It's just like we hit a bit of a rut and sometimes the finishing doesn't go your way. And that's just kind of how it was in December. And now it's going our way again, which is awesome.
Yeah, I think the other, I mean, I agree with all that. I think, and I might be forcing this, but I think the one other change I've noticed, well, one, we untethered, I think the first big change we made once we sort of hit a creativity rut late last year was sort of untethering Odegaard from that right eight space and just kind of letting him do whatever, because he's very fluid with his movement since then. Basically, since that Bournemouth away game, that's when we first trialed that. And since then, we've seen it more often, and now it's just the way he plays. And I prefer him in this version of him. If it means he has less end product, that's fine. But just the fluidity that he gives to the team helps a ton. So that was the first thing. The other thing is, I feel as if because the team moves pretty compactly, the team moves in a block up and down the field together. But I almost feel as if Saka and Martinelli are actually a little further back, because people want to be so close to them, defenders want to be so tight to them, that when they get the ball higher up the field, or at least when they used to get the ball higher up the field, it felt like there were too many people around them for them to make the difference 1v1 or to do anything useful out there. But now, because they're maybe like 10 yards closer to their teammates, or just back, if you will, it almost forces the other team to play higher up the field. Even if they want to play in a deep block, they got to come a little bit further up the field, which gives us more space to run into, more space for artificial transitions and shit like that. Yeah. And I think that's essentially how we fix the problem. And until someone else figures out a way to stop us from doing this, I expect more performances like this from Arsenal. I don't know if we're scoring 6 goals every time, but I thought we were fantastic today. We already talked a little bit about the big Gabby goal. That was another free kick from Declan Rice. Nicolas Rivera, we have to give him credit. We've been giving him credit all season, last season as well. He's clearly very good at his job, because there's so much intentionality about what they're doing. You know, like, yep, you can see that everything is planned. You know, like on the big Gabby goal, there were 4 people standing behind West Ham's line. And, you know, as the ball was about to get struck, they all jumped, you know, they do this often. They all jump back onside. You know, West Ham guys drop back, everyone's onside goal. You know, not a whole lot of science behind that. But then, I mean, did it ever feel like West Ham collapsed to you? I mean, I know they conceded a bunch of goals, but it didn't really feel like they collapsed. It just kind of felt like they were conceding goals.
I think once you've conceded like 4 goals in 1 half, you're just kind of fall apart. Like, it's, I remember Arteta talking about an analogy. I think it was an All or Nothing, where he was talking about like biking downhill, where sometimes you just start going so fast and you'll like feet will fly off the pedals and then you just like can't really get back on. And that's just like how it can feel sometimes when a team is just like really, really overwhelming you. And then they're scoring a bunch of goals on top of it. And then all of a sudden it's 45 minutes into the game, you're down 4-0 and you're like, fuck, what do we do? Like, Calvin Phillips had a tackle late in this game where it was just like, I'm fucking pissed that I'm here. Like, I want this to be over. I'm just going to 2-foot someone just because I'm mad.
That boy, like, hates cardio.
And so, like, it just kind of happens when you're a team like West Ham who doesn't want to control the game, and you're going to want to play in transition, and now your outlet to do that is pretty much done because you've conceded 4 goals. We have the ability to now sit back. The ball's in your court, and you don't know what the fuck to do with the ball because you don't have a shot on you. Like, you can't do anything about it.
Yeah, it was really sad watching them play these long balls into Jared Bowen and watching them get alternately gangbanged by Saliba and Gabriel. It was hilarious, actually. It wasn't sad. No, I'm not pausing that. That was intentionally nasty, okay? like, he looked so sad and pathetic. Kudus looked just like he did in AFCON. Actually worse, because he actually did something at AFCON. And truthfully, we just owed them a whooping. Like, we really owed West Ham a whooping. And I feel like the Trossard goal right before the half was the encapsulation of whatever you think is going to happen in the second half, it's not going to happen. This is over. Like, you know, Kai Havertz, I know people still found a way to give him shit today. They still found a way to single him out and give him shit.
He was good.
Let's not give that a lot of oxygen. But he wins a second ball, which people don't give that quality a lot of credit, because it's not end product. It doesn't directly lead to anything most of the time. But the capacity to win so many duels, to win so many second balls, is why Arsenal are arguably the best out of possession team in the world right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and Kai Havertz is a big part of that, even though people, I think, you know, we've discussed this ad nauseum on the podcast, but the issue is that people expected more pizzazz and sizzle in the final third, as opposed to a player that is so, Kai Havertz is like the best analogy for him is like, he's like a mother of like 10 other kids. Like, he plays to serve other players. There's very little selfish in his game. He's like, if he was more selfish, he would be doing more stuff that would make people like him more, I think.
Yeah.
But he's just so, I mean, like, it can come across as passivity when the game isn't going well, but when you're winning 6-0, it comes across as a guy that just enables other people. He plays to make other people play better, like Jorginho does. Mm-hmm. And he did that on the fourth goal. He won the ball, hands it off to Odegaard. Odegaard plays it into Trossard. And was that the best finish of the day for you?
No.
trying to trip you up there. Trying to trip you up.
It can't be. Like, it was a great finish, but someone one-upped him. More on that later, gang.
Indeed. What did you make of West Ham fans leaving? Would you have left before halftime if your team was losing 4-0 at home?
Oh, man.
Or would you have stayed to boo Declan Rice more?
I think sometimes it's easy to be a fair weather fan when you're down 4-0 and it's not going well. I don't know. I don't know what I'd do in this situation. I think I would pull a U, and it would depend on how cold it is.
I don't want to tell a fan of a shitty team like West Ham. Yes, I said it. How to support their shitty team, because that's not a problem I currently have. But back when Arsenal weren't good, I turned off many a game. So I can't really judge them for that. Like, if your team is losing 4-0 at halftime, the odds of you coming back to tie the game 4-4 are very, very slim, okay? Like, that whole Arsenal away at St. James's Park bullshit does not happen that often, okay? That was an aberration enabled by the referees. RIP Sheikh Tiote, but that shit was some bullshit. That game pissed me off so bad. Abu Dhabi got a red card that he did not deserve in that game, and that is what triggered that stupid fucking comeback.
What year was that game?
I don't know, man. I just remember
Abu Dhabi was in the team, which means I was not a fan. Yes.
No. You were probably not even born yet or some shit. I don't know.
Oh, okay. All right. We don't need to do that.
Did you have any thoughts on, Kale, a friend of the pod, asked if I would change anything at halftime. And second time I used the word on the pod today, I thought, no, that would be churlish. Like, we're winning 4-0. Like, there's nothing to change. Unless someone is, like, carrying an injury we don't know about, I kind of felt like we could have just kept it going, and I think that's what Arteta did.
100%. I think you're gonna have some sickos that are like, yeah, we should have brought on Winieri at the 35th minute, they're wrong. But yeah, I don't think that's a. I don't think this is a game. When you're 4-0 at the half, you don't need to make a change at halftime.
Nah.
Like, we made protective subs a little bit later, and that was totally fine. I think I have no gripes with how we did our substitutions today.
Yeah, I noticed that West Ham made changes. I think that's when Calvin Phillips came on, and I think Mavro Panos came on. He'd scored against us at the Emirates, and former Arsenal player.
Yep.
And obviously didn't make a difference, because it didn't take that. I think the first thing I remember from the second half was Trossard blasting one over that probably should have gone in, I feel like.
Yeah.
Maybe should have left it for Odegaard, you know, like. And that wasn't the only time that happened in that half.
Yeah.
It just so happened that the next time it happened, Declan Rice did a crazy thing. But before that happened, Bukayo Saka essentially scored the goal to confirm that I'm the man. What'd you make of that one, Mitch?
What a fucking finish. Like, Mbappe near post finish. We love that. Saka stole a celebration last week and then stole his goal today. It was great stuff. Saka now has 100 goals and assists at 22 years old for Arsenal, which is crazy. He scored his 50th Premier League goal and 51st for Arsenal. Absolutely crazy. He's just fucking him. It's awesome.
It's pretty nice to have a guy that good on the field. I will say, for the second goal he scored, where he got the ball, he wasn't out on the wing like he typically is. He was more in the space that you'd expect to see Odegaard in. I just think in the long run, I don't know how we make that happen more often, but that needs to happen more often. Because when he gets the ball in that half space, he's damn near unstoppable. he makes something happen almost every time he gets the ball there. So I'd like to see that more often. Let's just skip ahead to the Rice game because we've kind of talked around this a bunch. Yet another like easy break into West Ham's half. A cutback from Benny Blanco, Trossard, and Odegaard getting each other's way again. And I'll let you take it from here, Mitch.
Declan Rice just has a cool little finish. You know, he just dribbles into the, you know, nothing to write home about or anything. And then he like knee slides in front of the West Ham fans. Did I get that right? Did I see that right? I don't know.
I thought in my mind too, but obviously did not celebrate. I thought it was actually a pretty cool celebration. I mean, like, cause I don't know. I think of the guy as a classy kid and he has to live around all these ugly West Ham fans in London. I don't think he even moved house when he switched clubs. So I can understand him wanting to be chill about it. And honestly, I can't think of a better comeback on a team than getting a clean sheet, you know, like silencing the boos, getting cheered as you get subbed off, scoring a golazo, he had a great day. Definitely a better day than both of us are having so far.
I think. 100%. I think that West Ham fans booing him is so fucking childish. Like, he's a club legend who gave you a record fee in leaving. Like, he wasn't going to be with you forever. Like, you have to have some, like, just, like, self, what's the word I'm looking for?
Awareness?
Yeah, self-awareness of, like, yeah, he's, you know how good how good Declan Rice is. You've seen him play for a long time. You know that his ceiling was not with West Ham. He won you a European trophy in his last ever game. He was a captain of the team, clearly loved playing for the team. And you're like booing him every time you get the ball. If we were actually rivals, like just because West Ham is a London team does not make us rivals. Like we do not have a rivalry with West Ham.
I don't know that us foreigners get to decide that, Mitch. Like if Londoners, I mean, like Poch was in the stands today, mm-hmm. and he was going to leave a voice note at some point in the game. We were probably winning by 20 at that point. And he started the voice note, then stopped it, then deleted it and typed, I need to make sure I'm in a safe space before I do that. Like, so if it matters that much to the people on the ground, then, you know, I get, and you know, I'm not a West Ham fan, obviously. I've never made a choice that bad in my life. Maybe law school. but I can understand why some of the fans boo him. It's still childish, but I understand why. Because I think for a lot of them, it would have been easier for them to accept him leaving if he had gone to Man City. You know, because that is a ghost of a husk of a corrupt piece of shit club that nobody really cares about. Like, they win all this shit and we all just pretend it's not happening because it's an easy thing to ignore because you know how they got there.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if say like United or Liverpool or Arsenal were the ones dominating in the way that City had dominated, there'd be a lot more vitriol on football Twitter and, you know, on Sky Sports and all that. Like with City, everyone's just kind of neutral. So I think a lot of them were hoping that if he was going to leave, that he'd go to a club that he didn't care about. Yeah. But not only did he leave them for the best team in London, you know, he's still their neighbor. So I can get them, you know, like, and I don't really view it as like malicious booing. And at the end, they did cheer him when he went out for the most part. I did see a guy in the stands making the wanker sign though, which cracked me the fuck up, you know, but that was a hell of a finish. I mean, that's, you don't see that kind of goal very often where it kind of curls across the keeper like that and they don't get to it. Like, it was a great finish.
No, that like had like a touch from a higher being, like where it's like, this is, all right, you're going to have one from here, Deck. All right, cool. Well, you're playing against your old club. I'm going to force this in. Like, it's going in. I'm sorry.
Man, what do you make of, I mean, like, I don't know that we expected much from West Ham, but they had beat us twice this season. What do you make of their actual performance today? Were they just shit?
Yes.
Like, I'm trying to think of any sort of moments that they created or good takeaways. Like, because for me, if I'm David Moyes after this game, if I still have a job, which he should, by the way. Actually, I'll ask you this question instead. What do you make of Moyes as West Ham's coach? You talked about their fans needing to have a little more self-awareness of their position in the table and where they are as a club and the fact that he just won them a European trophy. But they play some grim stuff. Like, when Paqueta isn't there, it's really ugly to watch for the most part. And I can understand what just, you know, giving up on everything Moyes has done just to watch some more entertaining football every so often. But where do you stand, Mitch?
Someone in my group chat suggested Graham Potter, and I'm with that. I feel like he'd cook at West Ham. I don't think that Moyes has done a job to get fired, but I also don't think that he's done well enough where it's like, yeah, keep him as the manager for the next like 20 years. Totally. He should just be a mainstay. I think that, you know, you win a European trophy, no matter if it's the Conference League, you're going to have a little bit of leeway, especially in a club like West Ham, because they're not like trigger happy like Chelsea, where it's like you're like Di Matteo, who like won the Champions League and then just get sacked like next season.
Well, they weren't wrong. They weren't wrong to do that.
And I feel like he's got some leeway, but I also think that like West Ham has been, I feel like, very under the radar in how efficient they've been in transfers. Like, I really like the squad they have.
Yes.
They were shit today, but like I love James Ward-Prowse. Mohamed Kudus is so good. Paqueta is amazing. Like, they've got some serious players on this team. They don't really like this should be a team that's competing to qualify for Europe. And they did not look like it today. They looked like a relegation team, and the players on this team are not bad enough for them to look like that. I don't think.
That's very well said. I think this is definitely a failure of management today. When like when two or three players look bad, then yeah, okay, two or three players had a bad game. When everyone looks terrible, then that's on the manager. So I didn't get a chance to listen to David Moyes' press conference after the game or any interviews, because I don't like looking at sad Scottish people specifically. Sad Irish is fine. Sad Scottish, I don't like that. I don't like it at all. I mean, I guess if I'm a West Ham fan, it would be mixed feelings. It'd be mixed feelings with him, because you can't ignore what he's done. But at the same time, like, that was fucking grim, man. Like, you can't be losing 6-0 at home. Like, Coach also posted this in the group chat after the game. He said he heard a pair of fans, West Ham fans, in front of him as he was walking out going on about, you know what? If we'd lost 2-0 at home today, that's fine. Losing 6-0 away from home is not cool, but that makes sense too. But to lose 6-0 at home, like, that's a fireball offense, you know. So I can see fans turning on him pretty quickly if they don't. And they haven't won this year, West Ham, which was actually the most terrifying thing prior to the game.
Their last win was against us.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of charity we like to be like, oh, y'all haven't won this year? Here you go. Here's a nice 3 points to get you going, you bitch ass motherfucker. But this was utter domination. Let's do some subs real quick, because there's not much else to talk about. In the 67th, Nani came on for Rice. Rice was limping a little bit right before he scored that goal, so that made sense. Nelson came on for Saka. We always love to see that. And Trossard came off for Eddie Nketiah, your boy. What did you make of those three guys or their performances? I thought Nani did what he does, you know, keep it ticking, got two shots off per usual. What did you make of the rest of them?
I think Rice probably just had a dead leg. That's what it looked like. When he was like walking off and kind of limping, it looked like he just got like fucking dead legged and was just like, oh man, that does not feel good. But like I don't think he's hurt or anything. Like you said, love a little Elneny performance, you know, kept it ticking, kept the ball, and then got some shots off. And how much of a cherry on top for today would have been if Elneny scored a banger too.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting it, because West Ham, they were just there for the take. They didn't want to be there anymore. And I don't blame them. I mean, you're 4-0 down against, 4-0, then 5-0, then 6-0 down against arguably the best out of possession team in the world. Like, that can get peak. Like, that seems like a frustrating time for anybody, really.
Yeah, and I thought Nketiah and Reese were fine. They weren't the crown jewel of the substitutions. That was obviously Cedric. and so, you know, they were okay.
I think Cedric and Waneri came on for Martinelli and White, not respectively. But that was like, those substitutions were the perfect, okay, you guys are kicking now. You're just kicking us now. Okay, cool. Well, you can kick Cedric, but you can't kick Benny. do what you want to Cedric, but do not.
He's a punching bag. Just do that.
Do that.
Get on him.
of all the subs, and not that anyone really stood out per se, but I actually thought Ethan was the most effervescent of them.
Oh, yeah. 100% agree. That kid does not look 16 when he's playing. Like, he plays with serious maturity and, like,
confidence.
confidence on the ball where it's like, dude, you're a 16-year-old playing in your second Premier League appearance, and your first one was like a two-minute thing, just like off the bench and stoppage time against Brentford. Like, he was playing like he had something to prove, and it's like, dude, you would just gotten your driver's license in the United States. That's crazy. And you're playing in a Premier League match and like looking good. Like, you should be getting shoved off the ball. You should be like looking like you're not up for men's football. Like, but he looked like he's supposed to be there, and we can't even legally send him on loan. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Like, not to circle back to my Havertz agenda, I found it really fascinating that even after Ethan came on, Havertz was still making sacrificial runs for Ethan Nwaneri. Like, think about the humility you have to have as a footballer for your team to be winning 6-0. You're a German international. You've been bought for transfer fee totals over £100 million, and you're making sacrificial runs for a fucking teenager. Like, people don't give you points for that shit, but I really appreciate that guy as a player. Like, and as I've said ad nauseum on this podcast, like, he has more than justified his purchase to me, and he's going to be better next season.
Mm-hmm.
Guaranteed. Like, for me, he almost reminds me of like Robert Pires. I mean, this is way before your time and shit, but Robert Pires didn't have the best first season at Arsenal. Like, he was cowed by the physicality of the Premier League, and that's obviously not necessarily Havertz's issue, because he's been cowing the fuck out of people lately. But he didn't quite become the Robert Pires that we watch on highlight shows all the time years later, until his second season at Arsenal. And I think, I don't know that Havertz is ever going to be the most important player in the team, but I think his time is still in the future. Like, we haven't seen anything yet at all. Gosh, we beat the shit out of West Ham. I can't believe we've managed to get a solid 41 minutes of conversation out of this. anything else from you, Mitch?
No, I'm just like, you know, it's always very exciting, especially we're in a great run of form. I've said it the entire year, and I'm going to keep reiterating this. I think we can win the league. Despite dropping those points in December, I still think we can win the league. It's going to be a fucking fight, because Liverpool are probably not going to go anywhere. City are not going anywhere. Like, it's going to be a fight. It's going to be tough. But I like the position we're in. I think a lot of people that want to be negative about this, let them be negative. We've just won 5 games in a row now. Like, there's a lot to be happy about right now. Our team's playing well. Our team is playing how we want them to play. And if we keep doing this for the rest of the season, we can be champions. We will lift a trophy, whether it's big ears or the Premier League. Well, I'm very confident.
Which one do you think we're more likely to win?
More likely, I feel like it feels insane to say this, but I do think that the road might be easier for the Champions League, just because what you've done in the past in the Champions League does not matter. Like, what you've done in the Premier League is going to matter, because you have a bad run of form in December, you drop some points, it can matter in April. In the Champions League, that one loss to Lens in the group stage doesn't matter. We're in the knockouts. It does not fucking matter anymore. The only thing that matters is the games in front of you. And I think within the games in front of us, we can beat any team in Europe. We can beat every single one. We are that good. And so I think that maybe it's more realistic that we do that, which I want to hold myself back from saying that, because it's like, oh, we haven't been in the Champions League so long, and then now we're back and we're like, oh, we can win it, which like feels like a very like cocky or deluded thing to say. But like, objectively, Arsenal are one of the best teams in Europe. So like, I think it's just like something where it's just like, I have to get past that. And it's like, I'm not being a deluded fan by saying Arsenal are one of the best teams in Europe, because we are. That's just a fact.
I completely agree with you. I've said that multiple times on this podcast alone. They're truly not. I mean, the two teams that might be a level above Arsenal, just because of their experience and the malleability of the talent they have, would be Real Madrid and Manchester City. Mm-hmm. Manchester City, we beat twice this year already.
Yep.
Limited to one shot on goal, them and Liverpool, you know, at the Emirates. So that's something to be said for Arsenal.
Yep.
I would say we're probably on the same tier as Inter Milan, who made the finals of the Champions League last season. But Inter is my other team, and I watch enough of them. They don't, in comparison to Arsenal, I don't think they're actually as good as Arsenal, personally. Mm-hmm. but they're also very malleable, very flexible, have a lot of experience, very clever team. But for me, those are the four best teams in Europe, or four best teams in the Champions League, because I think Bayer Leverkusen are actually one of the top five. I mean, they're undefeated.
I cannot wait to talk about them on the main pod. I'm looking forward to it. That's a little teaser for you guys. I'm getting called up to the big leagues this week. Let's go.
There you go. In any event, we will be back with another SPS Arsenal edition after Burnley away. Hopefully, we'll be rejoicing another deluge of goals and more points. Mitch, tell the people peace.
Peace.
I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go, got to catch my sugar. My plantain sugar, my plantain sugar, my plantain sugar. Ah, plantain, 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 plantain.